This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 96. This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com, email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com and call us on 0208 816 7691. My name is David Hinchliffe, and coming up on the show, we've got a story of success and batting collapses. We answer your cricket coaching questions and we get an insight into Bernard's eggs. And we have two interviews, one with the man who is considered the finest all-rounder of his generation, Brian McMillan, and the other with head of LCA cricket coaching, Richard Browning. And stay listening right to the end, because we've got the competition winners for this week. We're giving away some free cricket coaching. If you have any stories or cricket coaching questions yourself, then you can get in touch with us on all the usual offices, and I'll give those out to you at the end. But just to remind you, our answer phone number is 0208 816 7691, and our email address is mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. So now we head back to Pitch Vision Towers, where Bernard and I get an email which gives us the story of success. Right, we've got an email here from somebody who wanted to give us on one of the topics. So I haven't read this yet, so we'll edit as we go along, shall we? It's a story for the podcast from a chap called David, who I met at the Edgbaston Pitch Vision Academy Live event, which was good fun in itself, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, well attended, and a good day by all on the Pitch Vision technology.
Yeah. So let's see what David's got to say. A bonding as a team under adversity and beating the champions. Well, this sounds like my kind of story. After winning the third division last year, we had a few disastrous starts because of a lack of players turning up for games and rained off games in between. Now that sounds like a common
traditional English summer. Yeah. Yeah. We're feeling it, David.
On two occasions, we only had seven players available to play. On the first such occasion, we decided to concede the game out of embarrassment for not pulling a team together. Now, you see, I'm going to keep reading that, but we'll come back to that. Conceding a game? Anyway. one of the effects of this move, based on principle, was that we slumped from third to eighth place in a division of 10 teams. The painful lesson is that we couldn't afford to do this again, or we would surely be relegated. Therefore, when presented with the same resources a few weeks later, once the football season had begun again, our goal was not to win, but to scramble enough bowling or batting points in order to consolidate our position in the division, which we did. Apart from the obvious gaps in the field, the most challenging aspect of having so few players was the need for teamwork and multitasking, and all at speed. Padding up, yes, well, if you've got seven players, everyone
better
pad up.
Speed pad.
Yeah. Maybe that's a product that we need to think about.
Pads for
that.
Pad.
Yeah.
Sounds like something that should be in the Olympics to me.
Batting, scoring and umpiring, yes. Preparing drinks. And we bonded as a side due to the teamwork that was required just to compete. The game was followed the next week with a must-win game when we had the luxury of nine players. But we were up against the league leaders. Our captain won the toss, and with half the team stuck in traffic behind hay trucks, he was... This is good. He was left with little option but to bat. Half the team. So what? He only had five players.
They're all in one car.
I'd have been tempted to bowl. Your bowlers are going to have to bowl well with only five of you. Unlike the previous week, our one attacking opener was able to get off to a flying start and scored 40 off only 28 balls. Once he was out, the progress steadied. And mid-innings, it looked like our team was struggling to get a competitive total. Our middle order all-rounder, helped by the captain and myself, did see the 40 overs through against sustained quick bowling to reach a total of 149 for 7. Though the opposition skipper did play on to my first ball, the next two batsmen scored quickly, and the would-be champs looked to be cruising. We were forced to go to our leg spin bowler of the season earlier than usual, and soon had this duo removed with outfield catches. The opposition remained well ahead of the run rate, but after our second string bowlers had struggled, I returned to get my second wicket with the first ball of the second spell. Together with the star slow bowler, the game slowly turned our way, but the clincher was a stunning return catch from our leg spinner in his last over to remove their most steady middle order batsman. There was a late threat from a slogger, but when I bowled him and their number 11 in quick succession, our team had achieved a famous win by only 3 runs. All 10 wickets were shared equally between our leg spinner and myself, and thoughts turned to inscribing an honours board on the away team's pavilion.
Magnificent.
What an amazing story that
Survival.
Is. Yeah. Well, it just goes to show that how when we were talking about momentum, it just goes to show how when momentum turns, it can really turn and suddenly...
Well, the batting collapse, it's a phenomenon, isn't it? That no one really knows why or how, but it's much to do with that. The pressure, the situation, and the collapse.
There is a theory that it's quite a collapse is almost like a set piece in a game of football, where you've got the wall lined up and you decide how you're going to take the shot. It's not that different when you think about it in that way. And then just like you can practice your set pieces in a football match, you can practice getting the opposition to collapse.
Yeah,
which is an interesting theory. I don't know how true it is.
Yeah, I'd imagine someone's done a study on it, but it happens quite a bit, doesn't it? And it's you're thinking, how does that happen? Just a couple of quick wickets, everything changes, and you create panic, you create rash decisions, and people are getting out left, right, and centre, and you're suddenly the game can turn on its head in the matter of 3 or 4 balls.
I do think that, especially batsmen, they can get this this thought lodged in their head that suddenly someone is bowling magic balls every ball, or suddenly the pitch is terrible, and then any excuse for the collapse.
Well, just the fact that your thought process is maybe slightly different than A, watch the ball, B, move your feet, and C, either hit the ball or keep it out.
Yeah.
A probably reason alone to send you packing.
Yeah, exactly. Especially with someone chirping in your ear like me, who's talking about your shoes or.
You must be loved down in South Wales, David. That vibrant English accent reflecting off of people. All right, boyo. Oh, hello, sir. Welcome to the crease. My name's David.
I'm so glad you didn't attempt the accent. That someone said to me on Twitter, one thing Paul Nixon said once to a batsman was, when you hit the ball, do you breathe in or out?
Brilliant. Oh, yeah.
Your face. I wish this was video, because your face, I don't know what.
I can't think. That's too much for me.
Too much information.
I'll give my wicket up now. That's okay, because you're stood out the ground.
I think that's very good. Existential sledging.
Well, yeah, anything like that, anything that can take someone's mind into another place is cause alone to say it, isn't it? So quite clever there, a man with bags of experience.
Oh yeah, he's
his hairline shows it as well.
He's still doing it though, isn't he? He's signed another year contract. I saw the other day. So
okay,
he's still doing the job up there in Leicestershire.
Yep.
So it's time for the first interview of this week's show, and our first interviewee needs very little introduction indeed. In the final of our interviews for the Cape Town Cricket Academy with Ryan Marron, we're talking to former South African all-rounder Brian McMillan. Brian played Test and One Day International cricket for his country for many years, and he was considered as one of the best in the world when he was at his peak. He's going to be coaching at the Cape Cricket Academy in South Africa. And if you want to find out more about attending the Cape Cricket Academy, then you can visit www.capecricketacademy.com. I caught up with Brian on the phone a little bit earlier. What's been the best day of your life in cricket so far?
I suppose with any aspiring youngsters to represent your country. So when I was selected for South Africa in the old days, that was probably the best time of my life and the best day, and I definitely did celebrate it as well.
What advice would you give to a young player who's wants to improve his mental toughness?
It's just very difficult because to give any advice, I think you are what your environment allows you to be. So if you really want to improve your toughness, you've got to play in a tougher league, in essence. You will have a natural toughness, but you need to play with tough people. People don't accept coming second, and you want to be around winners. And winners are obviously naturally tough. And if you really want to improve it, that's the environment you've got to be. So you've got to keep on improving your environment, which obviously wash off on yourself to survive.
You were a talented all-rounder. How should a young all-rounder split his practice time between batting and bowling?
Look, just to add on to that, I suppose fielding would be another aspect of it. It's very difficult because you've got X amount of hours in the practice session. Unfortunately, as an all-rounder, you probably end up putting a little bit more time into your practice sessions. But you'll spend a lot of your time bowling, harnessing those skills, batting, obviously, from a technique perspective. Fielding, you'll probably end up doing that at the end of the session for however long and whatever you need to do. But you're part of a team, so whatever the coach allows you, you'll perform that. And if you feel that you need top up on any of the other skills, you will do that in your own time. So it's just very difficult. You'll probably bat, as coaches would do, 20 or 30 or 40 minutes with a cast, you'll bowl for an hour and a half, and then afterwards you'll probably hone your skills and outfielding or subfielding. So yeah, you've always got top-up sessions. So it's very difficult to put a time allocation to each skill.
What's the best piece of cricket advice that you've ever been given?
I suppose in the old days, Clive Rice was the captain of the Mean Machine or Transvaal in the old days, and I managed to make a side when I was about 20 years old, and he said, well, you're good enough to make a side, and you've got to back yourself because nobody else is going to back you, and that's probably the best advice that I've ever had. And obviously putting confidence in the youngsters on that basis.
You're going to be coaching at the Cape Town International Cricket Academy. What do you think are the main benefits of youngsters being able to experience an opportunity like that?
Look, bottom line is for any youngster going to another country, and I assume a lot of it will be foreigners coming to this country, South Africa is a beautiful place. But also, you will be out of the environment or comfort zone of parents and maybe personal coaches and that type of thing. You'll come to a source of a pool of coaches in the form of McMillan, Moles and Merrin. There's plenty of years of experience of playing cricket and coaching, and so from that perspective, they're definitely going to learn on the skill side. They'll definitely learn life skills, knowing how to adapt to environments, how to cook, which is on the agenda, how to do your own washing and ironing. And I remember my young dad when I went over to work, so that was probably the most difficult thing, is trying to get your washing done and trying to get someone to cook. So this will teach you the life skills, and obviously from a cricket perspective, playing in different wickets, you'll learn those skills as well.
And finally, a question which maybe give you an insight, a little bit more of an insight into your personality. If your house is on fire, the worst has happened, what would you rescue as you were running out?
Yeah, I did read something like that. It's a quite difficult question, simply because there's going to be a toss up between my wife and my whiskey collection. So I think the whiskey collection is a bit of a stage.
She can make her own way out.
Well, yeah. She's got two legs and she's got a mouth and there's a bicycle in the house if she wants. She can do whatever she wants. But my whiskey is very important to me, you know.
Brian McMillan, those are your questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Cheers, man.
It's about time we got stuck into a few coaching questions. So it's over to Berners for the first coaching question of this week.
All right, David, we've got a technical question here by Dev, just regarding the back foot drag of a fast bowler. He's just querying the ease in which a front-on bowler can get that drag compared to a side-on bowler who traditionally use their hip and shoulder rotation.
Well, it shouldn't really make any difference. I mean, if you imagine, if you picture in your mind's eye a bowler who a quick bowler, quick bowlers tend to land their front foot, then their hip comes through very quickly, and then their back, because their hip is coming through very quickly, their back foot drags a little way along the ground, and then their knee comes up and drives through, if you can imagine that.
Like a natural movement through the crease.
Yeah, so it's a very explosive, powerful movement through the crease compared to, say, a spin bowler whose back foot tends to come up off the ground very early.
It's all a bit airy-fairy, isn't it, the spinners?
Because the spinner is going into rotation, everything is about the rotation and getting as much spin on the ball as they can. That's the way the power's going. With a fast bowler, the power's going
raw forwards, power
as quickly as possible.
It's like forwards. A JCB against a milk float.
And Ian, exactly. and Ian Pont talks about this as hip drive. It's called it's called hip drive because the
sounds like something you do on Come Dancing.
yeah, exactly. Severn. so he when you're a side-on bowler, you can get a lot more hip drive because you start completely sideways on with your if you're a right-arm bowler with your left shoulder facing towards the batsman, and you finish with a full hip and shoulder rotation. Right. So your right
swing
shoulder
it through.
You go from one facing one way to completely facing in the opposite direction in the follow-through. Now with a front-arm bowler, of course, you start. Your shoulders and your hips start a lot further around. You're more facing towards the batsman to
you're
start
with. You're
square
with the batsman, yeah.
You're more facing towards the batsman to start with, but you end up in the same position. So the hip doesn't have as much room to drive through. So I think the question really here is, because the hip is not driving around as much because you start more front on, does that mean that you shouldn't drag your back foot? No, you still drag your back foot. It just doesn't drag for quite as long. But we're talking about fractions of milliseconds.
You don't have quite so much momentum from the swing of the weight transfer. Is that what we're trying to get to here?
Exactly. Because it's just a question of physics. If you think about the more an object moves through a plane, the more force it produces.
Okay.
If you think about it, like you've got a very long catapult or a very short catapult, the long catapult will go further.
Pendulum theory.
Exactly. So if you think about your hip as a pendulum, the there's less of a pendulum when you're a front-on bowler. Does that mean you can't bowl quickly? No. You could still bowl very quickly. Reference Malcolm Marshall.
Yeah.
Andrew Flintoff.
Yeah.
They were fairly front-on bowlers and they were both pretty quick.
Yeah,
it's just that you need to get there's even more need to get through the action as quickly as possible.
So it's about getting your body in the right place and getting the weight proportion through in a short time period to really generate that energy.
Exactly.
And power.
Exactly. And if your back foot is coming off the ground too early, then your hip isn't driving through well enough, your knee isn't coming through well enough, and you're not following through with a full shoulder rotation. So it's all a chain reaction. If one part of that chain reaction is out, that's the end of the speed. It just blocks it off. You might have to use your arm or something to get through the action, but it looks horrible and ugly. So, yes, drag the back foot if you're front on or a side on bowler.
Brilliant. Okay, Coach Davids. Got a question here from Gerard. I feel I need to gain some extra kilos in my body weight. Sounds like something I do voluntarily. Other people said eat a lot of carbs or eat a lot of protein. What is your advice on gaining weight? Well, I think I could answer this one, but I'll let you go ahead, David. Yeah. Mine would involve going to the Beef Eater, Gerard, and washing that down with about 10 pints of Stella. But I'll let David answer that for you in a more slightly technical way.
Well, there's two ways you could gain weight. You can do it the Burners method, the book. It's coming out in time for Christmas, or you can do it in a way where you put on as much muscle as possible without putting on as much fat as Berners recommends. So the way to do that is to eat a lot of food. There's no getting around it. You have to eat a lot of food, and it doesn't really matter whether it's carbs, whether it's protein, whether it's fat, or whether it's anything else. The key really is that you just need to eat a lot of food. Then you need to combine that with some very, very intense training. And that is the way to do it. Now, that's a very simple answer to what is actually a very complicated question. But the key is, if you want to add weight for whatever reason, you know, if you're a little stick thing guy and...
Eat a cow.
Eat a lot more food. And a lot of people who say to me, you know, I want to put on weight. I've been eating a lot of food. I'm still not putting on weight. Well, I guarantee you're not eating enough food then. My first question to someone says, oh, I eat all the time. I can't put on weight. First question is, what do you have for breakfast? Oh, I didn't have anything. I had a slice of toast. That's not enough. Yeah. there's your start off, you know. Yeah. There's your start off. You've got to eat a lot of food. And it sometimes, especially if you're a little thin guy with a little stomach, you know, you can feel very, very full all day.
Yeah.
You don't get that feeling that you have on Christmas Day when you just don't stop eating.
I'm addicted to eggs, David. What's your favourite munch these days?
Eggs.
I like eggs.
Yeah. Eggs are fantastic, aren't they?
Boiled, scrambled.
You can't beat eggs.
I don't fry them that much, you know. It seems like it's quite difficult to fry an egg. I quite like poached is awkward as well. You've got to stay boiled or scrambled.
Yeah. What do you have with your eggs?
Not a lot. A little drop of salt.
And that's it.
Very plain. Yeah. It's often got me in a lot of problems with that boiling water. But you know, forgetting I've got it on, not putting it on. You know, going into the kitchen thinking the eggs have been boiled, getting it out of the water, water's cold, eggs runny.
I do like eggs as well. Yeah, my current favourite egg thing is a 6-egg omelette with mushrooms and spinach.
6?
Yeah, I love that.
Wow.
Yeah, I love eggs.
Pay you too much.
it's only a quid for about 15 eggs in Iceland.
I had a very annoying housemate once in university, and he used to do my head in. He was a messy bugger, he was. So I boiled all of his eggs once, and I put them back in the fridge in the box. And he came down one morning, he's cracking his egg. He tried another one. He said, "You won't believe this." He said, "I'm gonna have to go back to Tesco's." He said, "These eggs I've bought here, they're boiled." Silly bugger drove up there, didn't he? I tell you, I was in hysterics for weeks. I was in an hour. Oh, God, absolute cracker, you know. Yeah, he's got a degree and he's working in the city now. But he honestly believed that he bought some boiled eggs from Tesco's.
What did they say when he got back to Tesco's?
I said, "Don't be so stupid, you've been stitched up." He said, "No, no one would do this to me." But there you go, Gerard. If you get stuck, give me a shout and we'll eat some eggs together, mate.
Yeah, you can't beat eggs. In fact, there is a serious point there as well, in that it's very important to eat real food. You know, food that doesn't come from a packet, and you know, food that is, you know, you might have to cook it yourself rather than just stick it in the microwave. So,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to restrict yourself. You do need to eat a lot of food to put on weight, but you know,
get stuck in.
Yeah, make sure most of it is stuff like eggs and meat and fish and fruit and vegetables, and you know, stuff your grandmother would
approve of,
recognise as food
that she's got in the pantry.
Pantry
food.
Pantry
isn't it,
food.
You know?
That's exactly right. So open up the condensed milk and the honey and get stuck in. And speaking of getting stuck in, we've got one more interview on the show for you this week. It's with head coach of the LCA cricket coaching, Richard Browning. LCA is the League Cricketers Association here in the UK, and as part of their offering, they do cricket coaching for all ages and standards across the UK. Richard spent 4 years as a professional for Derbyshire and Northants, and when he stopped playing, he started doing age group coaching at county level and is a level 3 coach and now runs the LCA cricket coaching arm full time. Richard gave us a few insights into cricket and cricket coaching a little bit earlier on. Who's the best player you've ever played with or against?
My debut against Worcestershire in 2006. Saw me up against sort of 9 international cricketers, so there's a fair bit to go out there. That was at New Road on a windy Sunday afternoon. And amongst the ranks, they had Vikram Solanki, Lou Vincent, Kabir Ali, and Zaheer Khan, just to name but a few. But the best player is probably Graham Hick. I didn't actually bowl at him that day, and he didn't get any runs in the game either. But you can do nothing but sort of idolise someone who's scored over 40,000 first-class runs. So, yeah, Graham Hick would probably be the best player I've ever played against.
You're in charge at the LCA coaching. Why did the LCA branch out into cricket coaching?
Well, to give you a bit of a background, Richard Logan, who is the ex-Northamptonshire, Nottinghamshire, Hampshire and Surrey fast bowler, he and I met up together when we were in Northamptonshire and decided to set up the LCA a couple of years after that. But basically, during my playing days at Northamptonshire, as a young lad, I had to fund my living, so to speak. So on top of playing, I also did quite a lot of coaching. I did stuff for the age group squads at Northamptonshire, as well as a bit of private stuff at Wantage Road. And every time I used to come back to the flat, he used to say, I don't know how you do that. I hate coaching, this, that and the other. And you know, he was very negative towards the coaching side of things. However, obviously, since he's finished playing professionally and he's done his coaching qualifications, he found out that not only was he actually quite, he enjoyed the coaching, but he's also very good at it as well. So I disappeared off to university and then did quite a bit of coaching up there. And then towards the end, I approached Logie and I said to him, do you fancy setting up LCA cricket coaching? Because the LCA itself was already established by that point. So I said, do you fancy setting up LCA cricket coaching in the South? Which would obviously help market the League Cricketers Association by name, but also give youngsters in the region the opportunity to receive first-class coaching from current and ex-professionals mainly, and hopefully also fulfil their potentials.
The modern coach has to wear quite a lot of hats nowadays, skill, fitness, the mental game, etc. What's the most important role in your mind?
I've been asked this question a few times, to be fair, by parents and sort of avid cricket supporters, and it's also one that's very difficult to answer. So my honest belief, which is based upon following top cricketers in the world, such as Kevin Peterson, Graham Swan, Jack Callis at the moment, and obviously Shane Warne when he was around, is that the mental side of the game is the most important. That's my honest belief. I said, you can see with all the players that I've mentioned, they're all resilient, sometimes thought of as borderline arrogant, to be fair. But the big thing is that they all believe in their ability. And that they're actually better than their opposition. It's also the most challenging to coach, the mental side of the game. And there sometimes lies the issue with when you look at sort of junior selection policies. A coach must be able to judge the mental strength of a character pretty early by using ways and means as they see fit. Generally, the way I use it is by fitness testing, not necessarily the results of the fitness test, but actually watching the testing take place, because it can give me an insight into the mental capabilities of a particular child. But obviously, built up around that, it's important to be able to build up a good rapport with certain individuals, because it'll allow me to see exactly how they tick. And also, once I've done that, it'll give me more control when I'm delivering the other aspects, so the skills and the fitness side of things. But it's still really vital that the coach has to be able to deliver the skill elements and that the kids have got the skill elements in place, because at the end of the day, no matter how big how good your mental strength is, if you haven't quite got the ability to make it, that'll also show through. Again, with the fitness as well, that's becoming an ever more important factor in cricket nowadays. But yeah, if I was to answer it with one of them, I'd say mental game, the mental strength.
What happens a lot in England is players get quite a lot of coaching in their clubs when they're young, but when they get to 18, they're playing club cricket, the coaching tends to dry up. Why do you think senior players don't get coaching in club cricket?
I mean, to be honest, my experience of modern day club cricket, albeit sort of Premier League standard, is that many teams do actually now carry around a coach with them. I mean, certainly at my club, I play at Chichester, and we ensure that the senior squad members 10 practice sessions and work at different stages with the coach on various elements of their techniques. So that sort of, for me, happens quite a lot in Premier League cricket around the country. Certainly the Premier Leagues I've played against, there's been coaches rocking up certainly to the first team games. I understand, however, that this might, it might not really be the case in sort of second teams and lower league clubs. And I feel it could be for a number of reasons, really. One, because the individuals might not want to take things too seriously. They'd prefer maybe to have a laugh with their mates on a Saturday afternoon rather than really being pushed when they were juniors. And two, because a lot of clubs don't actually get the funding for senior cricket development. The grants that are available on the whole are for the junior section of the club. To be honest, at LCA Cricket Coaching, we've sort of identified this as a bit of an issue, and we're looking into ways of eliminating the problem by holding various different senior masterclasses at various venues across the South. We hope that sort of senior players will sometimes admit to needing further development in the game, which is sometimes an issue in itself, and then obviously come along to learn a few things as well.
Finally, we just finish with a little bit of a fun question. What's your favourite comfort food?
Probably ashamed to say is chocolate. Christmas has been an absolute nightmare for me. Time off work and loads of chocolate is a bit of a recipe for weight gain, unfortunately, as I'm sure is the case for many others. So it's looking like it's back to the gym now for me.
Richard Browning, those are your five questions. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
So it's been a jam-packed show this week, and we have run out of time, but I've got enough time to give you a few little details. The winner of this week's competition, well, it has to be David for his fantastic story of success and subsequent batting collapse discussion that Berners and I had. Don't forget, we give away cricket coaching every single week on the show for the best story or question of that particular week. Some of the stuff that we're interested in getting from you is our appeal of nations. Don't forget, all you have to do is give us a ring on 0208 816 7691, or if you're calling from outside the UK, 44208 816 7691, and give us your appeal, your name and the country you're from. Two people left answer phone messages last week. Fantastic, thanks for that. Unfortunately, neither of them can be used. One was blank and the other was somebody laughing, which didn't quite give me the appeal that I was looking for. So if you're one of those people and you think that you left an appeal, then give us another go. There's hundreds of you listening to the show, so competition is tight for places, but get your appeal in nice and early and represent your country. We're still looking for our most committed player. 250 miles is our biggest round trip to play a normal game of cricket. Can you beat that? We're also looking for players for our select 11. Do you want to be in the Pitch Vision team? We've still got 11 slots open. Email us on mycricketcoach and pitchvision.com and tell us exactly why you want to do that, or catch us on Twitter. We're at PV Cricket Coach. If you're in Australia, you can call us on 028 005 7925, and if you're in the USA, you can call us on 347 722 1981. And don't forget, of course, we're still looking for coaching related questions. So if you've got a problem with your cover drive, or if you don't feel like you're fit enough, or you're one of those players who always plays well in the nets but can't seem to do it in the middle, drop us an email, leave an answer phone message for us, or get us on Facebook if you search for Pitch Vision Academy, or get us on Twitter at PD Cricket Coach. Berners and I will be back next week with more of your questions and some more free cricket coaching to give away. So until then, we'll see you next time.